everybody, and welcome to this brand new Black Hole Classics. This is our third one, after two successful ones, which were The Night of the Hunter and 2001 A Space Odyssey, where we pretty much reached the apex of cinema. So we are staying in the science fiction genre. I'm, of course, Tony Black, host of Black Hole Cinema, which is a spin-off for. And today, talking, as I say, about a science fiction film still, is one of my oldest and best friend, Mr. Matt Latham.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. This is your first Black Hole Classic. And why don't you tell us what film we're going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about Demolition. No, I'm not. I'm going to be talking about Blade Runner.
I need your deck. This is a bad one. Worst yet. There was an escape from the off-world colonies 2 weeks ago. 6 replicants. 3 male, 3 female. They slaughtered 20.
A Blade Runner's job is to hunt down replicants. Manufactured humans you can't tell from the real thing.
What's this?
Roy Batty. Probably the leader.
There was just one outfit making replicants that superhuman. The Terrell Corporation.
Mr. Deckard, Dr. Eldon Terrell.
I don't get it, Tyrell.
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto.
I was looking for 6 replicants in a city of 106 million people.
You ever seen this girl, huh?
Never seen her, Buzzlov.
What I didn't know was they were looking for me.
Blade Runner. Not Demolition Man, as you were about to say, which, as everyone knows, as I say everyone, us two, knows is your favourite movie of all time. Blade Runner, which is the 1982 recognised classic of science fiction cinema.
Well, 82, 2007, 1999, 92.
We'll get on to that. Because, yeah, you're absolutely right. But the original film, which was directed by Ridley Scott, was from the novel called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which, as you'll probably agree, isn't quite the catchiest title. For
I think it's an amazing title, but then again, this is me.
This is later.
Yes.
But it is a great title, but it would have been a little bit hard to market. Blade Runner, which was based on the rights, actually, for a William Burroughs novel, which was bought by the producers of Blade Runner so they could use it in the actual film. But it is actually the title of the book, written by Philip K. Dick, and obviously starring Harrison Ford as Rick Deckard, who is a...
Blade Runner.
He's like a gumshoe in the future. So it's a very, very stylized film. It's a very interesting film. I have my own opinions on it, which I will get to later. But firstly, why, Latham, is this a classic?
It's a retroactively recognised classic. I believe it wasn't actually a big success when it first came out. But it was probably one of the first films to perhaps successfully combine science fiction with another genre that you probably would not have known. I mean, it wouldn't be the first film that combined two genres. I mean, I think Star Wars was it's basically an adventure novel with a different setting.
Epic fantasy.
Yes, exactly. It's Lord of the Rings, but in space. What in Blade Runner, you have the 1940s hard-boiled detective story alongside a near futuristic science fiction landscape, and it combines it quite well. Even particularly coming off the back of, I think, Star Wars, which was very bright and family friendly. I think the Star Trek movies in 82. How many Star Trek films were there?
That was Star Trek 2: The Wrath of Khan was 82. So there'd been the motion picture beforehand, which was much more akin to something like Blade Runner, because it was slower and it was much more a meditation. Mm-hmm. It was only later on that they started becoming more epic adventure films. Admittedly, you did have Star Wars, which came out before Blade Runner, but they're very different kind of science fiction.
It has a very original, tone in it for a science fiction film. It feels less a sci-fi film and more a detective story with sci-fi bits in it. It's more concerned about humanity than technology. Well, actually, one of the main themes of the whole film is the balance between humanity and technology. Mm-hmm. And I think at the time it was probably it was just before that question was really beginning to rise. I think later you'd have more 80s science fiction films that would start to have questions about artificial intelligence and technology, humanity, etc., etc., which I think only really was a main focus in 2001. Yeah, and I don't think there's... it's probably one of the first major films to emphasise that as a theme.
Well, yeah, and we discussed this with Owen Hughes last time, which was about HAL being this, you know, almost the next evolution of technology. So
yeah,
and a film like Blade Runner is going to have some elements. I mean, very few films after 2001 didn't take a cue from it. I think in terms of science fiction, really, in some ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, influenced the entire genre. But
yeah,
you're right in terms of the noir is the main aspect, the femme fatale, the dark cinematography, but the mood of it.
Yeah, and it builds up this question about. Well, humanity versus technology, in that the villains of the film are basically artificial intelligence who want more life. They have a set life. They're gonna pretty much switch off permanently after 4 or 5 years.
The replicants.
Rutger Hauer, Daryl Hannah, Joanna Cassidy, led by Rutger Hauer. Their quest is to basically find their creator and ask for more life. There's a very interesting question here in terms of the human characters that as humans, we can't go and find our creator to ask for more life because everyone's got a limited lifespan. Whereas these replicants, they do perhaps have the opportunity to ask for more life, but then don't want to. I mean, I remember reading something years and years ago about the fact that all that the replicants really want is to have more life. They're only seeking life. They're not exactly villains as such. I mean, their only crime is that they're artificially created. And Harrison Ford is pretty much tracking down these and is killing them just for being who they are. But, I mean, well, yeah, they did escape. They did escape from where they should have been, but their only real crime is being artificial.
Is existing.
Yeah, existing. I mean, I don't think the film doesn't go too in-depth in it, but it's there and there's been loads of stuff on it. But the very interesting question throughout is, if someone had the power to extend the life of someone, could you do it? Who has control over life and death? If there is a divine being that gives us life, or controls life, everything, do they have the ability to... Is it right for them to be able to say, yes, we're going to give you more life, or no, we're going to kill you now, we're going to kill you? Because Tyrell, who creates the replicants, Deckard and Gaff, or the other Blade Runners, they're effectively playing God into saying that, in that, your crime is this, and you can't really go around being who you are. You're just going to have to get killed. And there's a very, very... One of many favourite scenes. Not my all-time favourite. I'll get to that in a sec. Where I think it's Saphira. Is that Saphira? It's Joanna Cassidy's character. I can never remember her name properly. He's pretty much chased down the street and then just shot through glass. And, like, Deckard shoots from the back and she just falls down. And I think the only crime she really did... She didn't really do anything, I think, in the film. And Deckard pretty much just hunts her down, shoots her, and just leaves her there. And it's quite a powerful scene. And okay, in terms, perhaps in the '80s, like, yep, the good guys found one of the evil replicants and they've killed him. But when you look back at it, it is pretty much an execution.
Mm.
It's an execution, and for no real good reason.
Well, I joked earlier about, you know, the title, Dangerous Dream of Electric Sheep, but the title itself is very interesting because it's asking this idea. Do these creatures that have been, effectively these creatures, these machines who've been created, do they dream? And the very essence of dreaming is consciousness, is, you know, thought. It's a very human soul kind mm-hmm. of religious idea. And, you know, the question is, do they go through that same process? And I think that's at the heart of what Philip K. Dick's trying to get at with his book and Ridley Scott with his film, in that, you know, it's the question of what makes them human, what makes humanity. And, you know, it is that whole thing with technology, and it's probably become even more prescient these days, this kind of film, because we're entering an age now where AI is is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got these robots being built in Japan that can do all kinds of things.
It's not massively. There's a video, I think, they try to get walking robots, and there's a very funny montage of them falling over. So they haven't fully cracked it just yet.
But we're at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, within the next... I mean, look at how technology advances, you know. 10 years ago, nobody... You said an iPhone to somebody, they would have gone, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a case of... And we all use them. So in 2025, who's to say we won't have the first kind of, you know, AI or at least a certain robot that is indistinguishable from a human? So...
Yeah. Depends.
It's a kind of prescient kind of film.
Yeah, it probably depends how sentient Siri's going to get.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If they upload Siri into a robot bod.
I'm calling this now. In about 2026, you're going to have Cortana and you're going to have Siri in sort of Ultron and Jarvis kind of deathmatch.
Yeah, and then the winner becomes Skynet.
Yeah.
You know, and we all die.
Yeah.
it's carrying a lot of things behind it, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in terms of a production perspective, then, I mean, thematically, we've got all that, but in terms of the production and the way it's shot and the way it looks and everything, why does it have that classic status? Why do people revere it? Because it wasn't revered at the beginning. It became a cult hit that has steadily become more beloved over time.
I think the cinematography in itself has offered itself a very unique... It's not neo-punk, it's more neo-noir.
Mm.
It's nothing really punky about it, but it's...
Cyberpunk, though, perhaps.
Yeah, it's cyberpunk, a more realistic approach to cyberpunk. The opening shot of the police spinner going across LA, there's like that shot of the Japanese woman eating that menthol sweet on the side of the wall, on the side of that video wall, which I think is very much an iconic shot. There's, again, the sequence going through when Saphira gets shot, going through the glass... the smoky atmosphere, the very low-lit apartments, the very contrasting, like when you first go into the Tyrell Corporation and then Rachel appears and it's Sean Young just looking very like a stick with a white circle on it. It's very stark, very interesting cinematography. And the shot, there's the famous picture of Harrison Ford dangling off the edge of that building with one injured hand.
Interestingly enough, I don't know if you remember Skyfall, but there's a scene where Bond fights a guy on a Shanghai rooftop
mm-hmm.
that's very Blade Runner-esque, and then he's hanging from the edge of a window. And that's exactly the kind of legacy. That,
yeah.
If Sam Mendes wasn't thinking of Blade Runner at that point, I'd be stunned.
I mean, that picture, it probably appears in a lot of magazines, that picture of Harrison Ford. And if there's ever an article on Blade Runner, or if it's mentioned, it's probably that picture that's shown. Incidentally, I have to talk about that climax where he's pretty much battling Batty, played by Rutger Hauer. He's one of the best climaxes to a film. It's not action-packed. It's more a scrap in the rain, more than anything. But it then leads to Rutger Hauer's character just dying and giving perhaps one of my favourite lines dialogue in movie history, where it's like, I've seen some moonbeams over the Orion sector, blah blah blah. All these moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die. And then just throws that white dove into the air. I'm pretty sure all that pretentious white dove stuff. I'm pretty sure John Woo probably nicked it as well.
I was about to say.
Yeah, John Woo probably nicked it from her. But it's that line where and he was on about the whole thing about, can artificial intelligence be able to think on its own or generate a subconscious? That moment in the film builds that idea that this artificial intelligence, this replicant, is going to miss, has seen these images, remembered them, and looks back on them fondly, and that vanishes as soon as it dies, which, again, is a very human thing. There's probably things that people have memories that are very unique to them, which unfortunately will get lost once we inevitably pass away. It's a human thing, and it's probably one of the more human, it's probably the most human element in that film comes from one of the artificially created characters. And it's probably one of the best moments in film ever.
Interestingly enough, Roy Batty, obviously played by Rutger Hauer. He was the only character, certainly the only lead, I think, who was eschewing for the part, Rutger Hauer.
He was
the first choice. So, and then beyond that, there was a lot of questioning as to who played, especially Deckard. There was a lot of people lined up for that, chiefly Dustin Hoffman, who was talking about it for ages. They modelled him on Robert Mitchum, and I think originally they thought about it, kind of a Robert Mitchum, but he was getting on by then. But you had loads of actors like Gene Hackman, Sean Connery, Jack Nicholson, Paul Newman, Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Al Pacino, Burt Reynolds, even Arnie was considered for Deckard.
Get replicated, replicant, bang!
Exactly, right, yeah. So, you know, you had...
It's time to run the blade.
And also, interestingly,
you know what, I really wish it was an Arnold Schwarzenegger film. That would have been amazing.
Somebody ought to recut that.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, Harrison Ford and Ridley Scott really did not get on in the making of this. And when they when there was infamously the director's cut in 1992, which added narration, and Harrison Ford has gone on the record as saying that he was dragged kicking and screaming to the recording studio.
I think the first, because I remember the first time I watched it was a video of the director's cut. I think we were staying in me, my mum, dad, and my sister were staying in this like guest house, and I can't remember where. And there's like a box full of these films, just videos to watch, and one of them was Blade Runner. And I think we watched it, and I can remember watching it with the narration, and I think it's probably the only time I ever watched it. I do mean to go and rewatch it, because I've got the box set, added box set for, which has about or four or five versions of it in the tin that I've got. And I think I only really watched the final cut, because the final cut's the definite version for me, because I think they've cleaned it up a bit. They brought back Joanna Cassidy and reshot the scene for the glass. Because you can kind of tell, you can see the stunt double in the original. Yeah. You can see the stunt double in the original. And they got Harrison Ford's son and shot him from behind to pretend that it's his dad and stuff. And yeah, I think the director's cut, I was trying to market it again to try and get more people to watch it. And I don't think it really worked.
Well, I mean, it was, there was a lot of people who didn't like that. And I could say Harrison Ford was among them, and he was very vociferous about the fact that he really begrudged having to go in and do that narration, which he thought he really didn't like at all. And, it wasn't the easiest filming experience. And those two, him and Ridley Scott, have since patched it up, and they can talk quite freely about it. But then, yeah, there was a lot of cuts to it. But the response to it was very interesting at the time, because it wasn't beloved immediately. And personally, I didn't like it the first time I watched it, and I haven't rewatched it yet, because I'm pretty, like, I'm shaking his head at this point. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that I will watch it again, and I will get more out of it, because I think partly I watched it at the wrong time, and I'm very much the kind of person who I'll freely admit that there are some times you can watch something that's great, but you don't realise it first time round, and I hold my hands up with that. So I'm hoping that next time I experience Blade Runner, I'm going to get it.
Yeah, to be fair, I had the same reaction watching Tron. I didn't like Tron when I watched it, but the first time I watched it was about four years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I think Tron's very overrated, but it's, yeah, there are certain films like that, but I think, you know, Blade Runner has been, the way I look at it is, if the majority of people are saying that something is a classic and it gets recognised as a classic and it builds in expectation, 9 times out of 10, the people who go, it's rubbish, are wrong.
Yeah,
they are wrong, you know, on a technical level. If the masses are usually right on things like this, they are. But a lot of people have said how brilliant a film this is. And of course, let's wrap this up with a little discussion about what could be considered, or if these days the way it had been filmed would probably have been some kind of twist ending, but it's left as more of an ambiguous ending involving Deckard. Now, spoilers, a spoiler warning if you haven't seen the film. But what do you make of that? What's your opinion on Deckard? Is he a replicant or is he?
It's very interesting because you don't really think of the question that much when you're actually watching it. Mm. And when you try and think about it, I think the original cut, or the Ridley Scott version of the cut, the final cut, because it ends with the downbeat ending of him going off with Rachel. Just beforehand, he finds this little paper folded up version of a unicorn that Gaff, played by Edward James Olmos, has left in his house or apartment. And earlier in the film, there's that whole unicorn dream that he has when he falls asleep at his desk at home. I've always gone back and forth on this, but I think And I think Harrison Ford has been quoted on this as well, is that I prefer to think that Deckard is a human. And there's not much evidence to confirm that, well, in the film, but because there's not much evidence to confirm otherwise. Mm. You're just assuming he's human, because you have to really read into it to get that whole, oh, is he a replicant type thing. Because I think the whole nature of the film itself is... are humans allowed to choose life and death for people who just want life, who just want more life because they haven't been given enough time to live it?
Well, it'll be interesting. I mean, we may end up getting confirmation on this because there's a sequel in the works by Denis Villeneuve, who did a very, very good director, actually, did Enemy and Prisoners, so that I'm very excited about him coming back to this world with Ridley Scott's producer, but... And apparently Harrison Ford is coming back as Deckard, but not for a main role, just to support him. So let's hope that we don't get confirmation either way, because it would be...
Well, if he's still alive, then assuming he's human, I mean, the replicants would only have, what, so much... Well, unless he's like a replicant built to fight a replicant.
So we may get it by default, the answer.
I don't know. Part of me's excited, part of me's not. I'm someone who does an automatic... I don't automatically go, oh, it's going to be crap. Why are they remaking this? Why have they brought back a sequel? Mm. Because you might not, as someone who's perhaps more in tune with the television model of stuff, I have always believed that if there's a story they want to tell involving similar characters before, then you should always have the opportunity to expand on that and expand on the world. And I think the universe of Blade Runner has a few more stories in it that I think would work well. It's just whether it's going to be well made. Okay, you can say it probably won't match the level of the original. Probably more successful commercially than the original was at its time. For people going in saying, but people going to go in and hate watch it for no reason. But I don't know. Part of me is kind of excited. I'm going to have to wait and see how much more stuff's been revealed later on. See a trailer, etc., etc.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting. Well, yeah, if you haven't seen Blade Runner, do go and check that out. It's it is a classic. I will revisit it myself soon. So, thanks very much, Lathan, for talking about Blade Runner.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. See you next time.
See ya.